Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of ScaryCast. This is the after Labor Day edition, so that's why we're coming to you on Tuesday night here. Dr. John Stamey live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And we've got our panelists and co-hosts with us and a very special guest. So this show is going to be a lot of fun. Just glad to be here, and I hope everyone had a great Labor Day and got a little bit of rest. I know I did, thank goodness. We have, from the world capital of murder, Harlan, Kentucky, Tony Pelosi. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I am doing wonderful, John. I'm looking forward to learning about Roswell, New Mexico. I have a lot of questions.
Well, we've got the man that has the answers, I'll tell you that. He's going to be our man in Roswell tonight, I'll tell you. And speaking of our man in Roswell, our man from Hollywood is here, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Dr. John. I'm doing good here now. The weather's cooled off a little bit. You know, we still have some fires going, but at least it's a little cooler out here.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad that you got a little bit of cooler weather. Papa Stroh is on in the room with Brady Hicks tonight because of our extra special schedule time. He was unable to make it, and Robin is busy doing top secret affairs in the psychic world, and she will report back to us next week what all she was doing. So they're both gainfully employed and working hard. They both have hall passes for tonight. So it is Dr. John, Tony, and Devin here as the co-hosts, and our guest, our man from Roswell, author, not a horse rider. He'll tell you about that later. We have author and Roswell native and resident, John LeMay. John, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, we are glad to have you. John and I were talking this morning so I could get a little bit more down about him and find out what a cool – he's done a lot of cool things, and he has a lot of great things that he's going to tell us about Roswell, and he's lived there all of his life. And I said, well, the title of this episode is going to be Growing Up in Roswell. I just think that's something people want to find out about. So without any further ado, John – I'm going to turn the program over to you to give us a recap of what it was like being a kid, being a kiddo in Roswell, and going up and down the streets where one of the most famous UFO incidences in history happened. Take it away, John.
All right. So I was born in 1985, which means I was born well before Roswell really began to promote the UFO crash for tourism, you know, just in case there's one or two people who don't know what we're talking about. You know, allegedly in 1947, a flying saucer crashed very near Roswell, and the military announced that in the papers, and then they very quickly denied it and claimed it was a weather balloon. The Roswell story died away till about 1977, until one of the men who was involved in the cleanup, his name was Jesse Marcel. He was interviewed, and then a book was written called The Roswell Incident, and it developed some traction for Roswell, but again, still no tourism dollars in Roswell from that. In the very early 1990s, we had two competing UFO museums. That's something that a lot of people don't know. And again, not a whole lot of traffic. And what really changed things for Roswell was actually the year 1996, so the movie Independence Day came out. And one of their plot points in the film was that they use a recovered crashed flying saucer from Roswell to help fight the invading aliens. And I think most people had not heard of Roswell up until that time, apart from maybe an Unsolved Mysteries episode or something like that. But that movie was huge because I remember being, you know, let's see, 11 years old and watching that movie in the theaters in Roswell, and just being shocked that my hometown was in a big Hollywood movie as a major plot point. And that was very fortuitous timing, because 1997 was going to be our 50th anniversary. So you know, 1996 again, Independence Day put Roswell on everybody's mind, and then we had the big anniversary the next year. I remember that. You know, I was, let's see, I would have been 12, and it was all the town could talk about that summer. You know, it's hard to say how many people actually came to Roswell. Supposedly, I think we had about 40,000 people come to Roswell just for the UFO festival, a lot of them reporters. And I remember there was a lot of rumors that probably weren't true. Somebody said that Will Smith was in Roswell to help promote the Men in Black movie. I don't know if that was actually true. But yeah, a lot of crazy rumors about who was popping up in Roswell for the anniversary. And after that, Main Street really changed. Just about every single business had a cardboard cutout of an alien or a flying saucer in it. And, you know, recently our McDonald's converted itself into a giant UFO. So now everything on Roswell's Main Street was UFOs. So it wasn't always that way. But about the time that I was a teenager is when things changed. And, you know, teenagers, they mow people's lawns. They mow older people's lawns. I actually mowed the lawn of one of the witnesses. His name was Robert Shirky. He's one of the ones who saw the debris being loaded up onto one of the planes. And, you know, me being a teenager, I don't think I ever even asked him about his experience, because as far as I was concerned, he wrote a book about it. If I wanted to know, I could just read the book. But that's what it was like growing up in Roswell. You know, I mean, I did get to meet some of the witnesses, and aliens for me were just a fact of life.
That's great. Now, you said that there was a story or a rumor that involved a trailer park.
Okay, so I'll go back again. So some of my past is my grandfather built a mobile home park, and that's where Robert Shirky lived for a while. That's how I knew him, and that's where I mowed his lawn. And Robert Shirky, when he left, he sold his house to another man named John Tilley. And John Tilley, he did not come to Roswell until after the incident had already happened, but John Tilley arrived in Roswell in October of 1947 as a man in the Army Air Force. So he got to the Roswell Air Force Base, again, right after the crash had settled down in July, you know, several months later. So John Tilley got to hear all these crazy rumors about the crash secondhand. You know, he didn't see any of this stuff. It's just stuff that other servicemen told him. And some of the men told John Tilley, he said, one of the aliens... And they were dead serious. They weren't trying to – I mean, he didn't give me the impression that anybody was trying to pull his leg. He gave me the impression that this was a real story, that these other men earnestly told him that an alien had – supposedly they thought the alien was dead. It was on the base, you know, in a room, and the alien somehow slipped out and escaped the base. And nearby the base there was a trailer park, not the one – you know, I was talking about earlier, totally different trailer park, but it was very near the airbase. And allegedly, this escaped alien was peeping through windows of the trailer park and getting people upset. And then it wandered back closer to the base where it was shot and killed. And that's, you know, a real, I would call that Roswell folklore, in the sense that I absolutely believe that there were dead alien bodies on the base. I don't know that one of them got up and ran through a trailer park, but I mean, it's just, again, that's what I would call Roswell folklore.
Okay. That's just, that's a great story. I had never,
great story.
I
yeah.
had never heard about it. And,
yeah, and John Tilley, he wasn't else? Necessarily trying to, yeah, vouch for its authenticity. He was just telling me a tale that he was told. But, if we want to go for more, kind of crazy alien
yeah.
stories, this is one that I believe because I interviewed the witness. So just for some backstory on Roswell, you know, again, we had the big airbase here for many years. Now, the airbase was shut down in 1967. And throughout the 1970s, the city fathers kind of took the old abandoned buildings from the airbase and found new usage for them. And the old base hospital, they converted into the New Mexico Rehabilitation Center, whereas where people would go to rehab whenever they've had an operation. And the building was haunted with, you know, a lot of human ghosts. Everybody who worked at that place agreed there were ghosts in this building. That was uncontested amongst the staff. And one of the staff, you know, in all honesty, claimed that she one night saw the ghost of what looked like an alien. And she's not someone who is seeking publicity. It's kind of one of those things where the story got out accidentally. It's not where she was trying to get on TV. She was trying to get a book deal. She never profited off of this story and never sought notoriety from it. But she was nice enough to let me interview her about it. And, you know, you can get a sense about people. To me, she was a normal woman. I wouldn't, you know, she's not someone who I thought, oh, she's crazy. She, you know, she seemed like anybody else I would meet in Roswell, just a normal person who happened to see something extraordinary. And she
John, you made a mistake. You said just like anybody else from Roswell, people from Roswell are obviously a little different.
Actually, Roswell people are quite normal. You might be surprised, or our definition of normal.
No.
So.
I was just giving you a hard time. No, I just.
Oh, it's okay.
This is you're the most interesting guest, in my opinion. You're the most interesting guest we've had in a long, long time, and you're telling us some stories. God, I mean, this is great. So we have a former rehab center that's haunted. We have a nurse who has seen the ghost of an alien. Now, about when did that happen? What year?
1997, amidst the furore over the anniversary. Actually, I believe it was even that summer. I'm going by memory, which can be dangerous. Yeah, she described him as a short little man with a big head, and he was completely wrapped in bandages as though he had been injured. And she said that she had a brief bit of paralysis where she couldn't move for a second as she watched it. Then it faded out of view, and I believe she saw it a second time a few nights later, and that was her experience. So, I mean, she's one of the only people I've ever met who said they may have seen an alien ghost.
Is she still alive as far as you know?
No, tragically, she passed away, I believe, in 2019. But I did interview her, and it's in a book I wrote called Roswell, USA, and she was also... somebody got one of her story, and they got her, I think, on Coast to Coast AM very briefly one night, if I'm not mistaken. So the story is out there. It's just not highly publicized.
Tony, you're our paranormal investigator. What would it be worth to you to actually see the ghost of an alien or interview someone who had? Would that be the high point of your life as an investigator?
It would be an extraordinary experience, and if you got it on film, it would be like a grand slam home run.
Priceless.
Priceless. But I've ran into locations before that had a lot of activity like that, and the stories, man. Whether they are in Roswell, New Mexico, or Harlan, Kentucky, or Chicago, Illinois, people see these things. And what's interesting is a lot of times when they go to work in these facilities, they're not believers. But now when they run face-to-face with something unexplained, they become believers real quick.
I had a story. This is a quickie, and John and Devin and Tony, I think you'll all appreciate this. Liz Brackett is one of our co-hosts on Pop Culture Stars. So she was off on a special assignment doing camera. She called me up. It was very odd for her to call me up during an assignment. And she said, John, we're in this insane asylum, and it is haunted. And these ghosts are unfriendly. What can I do? I said, well, that's easy, Liz. Go get you a couple Bibles, put one in each pocket, and just if you feel something very strange, just take it out and hold it up. And she said, well, there's a problem with that. I said, well, what's that? She said, I'm an atheist.
Oh.
I said, that is problematic, and get ready to meet God. And I laughed. I couldn't help it. And she goes to church now. She said that was the most frightening 2 weeks of her life.
Oh, wow.
Being in that insane asylum. It's one of those bad ones up in Ohio. And just she was petrified. So yeah, those experiences can be terrifying. All right. Well, anyway, well, Tony, since you're talking, do you have a question or two for our guest? And then Devin, I know you've got some questions. Tony, you got a couple more?
Absolutely, absolutely. John, the debris that was taken from Roswell, were you privy to any stories about any witnesses that saw the debris loaded up, and maybe what was on the trucks that they took out of there?
There's lots of really interesting stories about the debris. Like, we could do a whole hour on the debris, probably. My favorite, if I were to play Indiana Jones with the debris and try to find where to look for it today, other than a government storage facility, it's believed that what happened is the craft was struck by lightning over a ranch in a small town called Corona, which is fairly near Roswell. So the idea is it exploded over Corona. That's why you have what's called the Corona debris field. And then the craft continued to travel or descend southwards until it crashed near Roswell, which is why it's called the Roswell incident, because they recovered the craft near Roswell. So you've got an impact site for the entire craft and then a big debris field in Corona. Now in Corona, supposedly, quite a few of the ranchers that saw it would pick up the debris and keep it. And I would think that at least a few of them would have managed to keep it in their family without the government knowing about it. Who knows? A lot of them say that the government came to their home to retrieve the debris afterwards. There, you know, southeastern New Mexico, very, very windy. I can't imagine they picked up all that debris. Somewhere out in the desert, there's got to be some of that alien metal. Another interesting story, Jesse Marcel, which was the Roswell, I believe he was a major. I feel so bad I can't remember. I think he was Major Marcel. He brought some of the debris into his home in Roswell and showed it to his son, Jesse Marcel Jr., and his wife. And he picked up most of the debris off of the kitchen floor, but there was a little bit of debris left. And Mrs. Marcel allegedly swept it out of the house onto the dirt of the backyard. And then supposedly, not very long after that, they poured a concrete slab to make a porch there. So some people also think that you could hypothetically dig up that concrete slab and find alien metal under their porch, you know. So, I mean, lots of places where it could be hiding. But the basic story on the wreckage is that it was this metal similar to, I believe they call it now, nitinol, I think that's what it's called. But it's like a metal you could wrinkle up in your hand, and once you would let go of it, it would smooth out and be perfectly smooth, and you couldn't tell that you had wrinkled it. So it was a very strange metal in that sense. And then the other metal had strange hieroglyphic writing on it that they couldn't decipher. And that's the main stories about the debris that I remember.
What about the alien bodies that were recovered? What's your thoughts on that?
So everybody's stories pretty much line up on that. You know, anytime you get in history with witnesses who are looking at something strange under high stress, they all have different stories, you know. So one witness will say they saw four bodies. One witness will say they saw three. One will get confused and say they saw a dozen. But, I mean, regardless of the number, everybody pretty much agrees they saw bodies. And they all had the same description, which was big heads, big eyes, no hair on the bodies, tiny little mouths, and just way too many people that weren't really connected all said the same thing. So, I think there absolutely were bodies. And I don't think anybody was dumb enough to see the bodies and mistake them for crash test dummies, although I have heard a pretty good argument made that when people are in a bad accident, like let's say this was a military test craft and the pilots were human, after they got burned up, you know, they would shrivel up, you know, because all the moisture would be burned out of their bodies and they might look alien. But I would still think that people would be able to recognize a burned body as opposed to an alien. So but that is one of the alternate theories, is that it was just burned up human beings.
Right, but how tall were they? Do you have any idea how tall the aliens were supposed to be?
Yes, and that's actually the big hole, I guess, in the argument for them being either crash test dummies or
right.
humans. They're always 4 foot tall. That's right, about 4 feet tall. And one of the best witnesses on that, his name was Glenn Dennis, and I met him once or twice. Really nice man. He worked at the Ballard Funeral Home here in town, and the military called him up, and they specifically needed small caskets for children. And so he was very perplexed why the military would need caskets for children. And Glenn Dennis had a friend who was a nurse on the base, and his nurse friend told him in confidence that that she had seen the bodies and that they were tiny little bodies, and she sketched one for him on a napkin, I believe, and it looked like, you know, our typical depiction of an alien today. And Glenn Dennis said that the nurse disappeared after that, and he never saw her again.
Now, what will be interesting is, and I know it's been, you know, 70 years, if we could get a hold of a receipt, because if he sold something, he's gotten paid for it, and that would validate the stories on the children's coffin. And we could do a Freedom of Information Act to the military. I mean, you're probably not going to get nothing back, and they're probably going to say, well, that, you know, nothing was ever bought. But that would be, is the funeral home still in existence today? And they probably wouldn't have records dating back to 1947.
It is still in existence, yeah.
Maybe, just possibly. You know, who knows? I mean, it's worth a phone call or a question, you know. And then if you were able to find some sort of paper trail for the coffins, man, that would be something really cool.
That's an excellent thought. And I'm going to ask one of the UFO researchers I know if that's ever been done, because those guys are so – they leave no stone unturned, so they may have done that. I'm going to ask them about that.
But like I said,
good question,
that would be a way. Thank you. That would be a way to, you know, to start establishing some sort of paper trail, because, like you said, John, why would the military buy children's coffins if there's been, you know,
mm-hmm.
what
yeah.
would be the, you know, the sense in that, you know, they have a bunch of 4 foot servicemen running around, so that
mm-hmm.
those two things there, you know, I mean, they're trying to act like maybe that the test pilots, if there were test pilots, that they were burned and shriveled up, and they may have looked like aliens, but that, I mean, that has some validity to it, but you're not going to shrink the height, you know,
mm-hmm.
the skeleton.
That's true. Very good point.
So, you know, we got the 4 foot. Everybody's saying these creatures are around 4 feet. And then the military buys some children's coffins to transport something. And you know, I would try to make that connection there. You know, it's a long way back in time. But now I do a lot of research myself into murders and things that happened in the 1940s, 1930s, 1920s, and, you know, so these are some of the things that I look for. You know, I try to tie every,
mm-hmm.
you know, try to get me a common thread, you know, through the whole story or incident.
Yeah.
Okay. That's... Thank you, John, for that. I guess I had really never researched Roswell like I should have. I mean, it's pretty well known. Well, it's a fact that a craft landed in some way, shape, or form, and it's a fact.
You researched Lizard Man. That's more important.
Yeah, I absolutely
you
believe.
You got to research what comes to home.
I'll say this: I've already gotten in trouble for Roswell. And that's why I've stayed away from it. I have gotten
oh, okay.
in trouble. a lot of trouble, and it was quite by accident. So I guess that's what has taken me away from it. But it is, I think that episode is now over. That happened about 22 years ago, and that episode's. But because I think maybe
a
all
lot
that
of people have gotten in trouble over Roswell. I'll tell you that.
Okay, well, I was one of them. Okay, so
yeah.
I'm just having to sit here and not add my story to yours. I mean, it's just
okay.
It's terrible, but that's okay. But yeah, so thanks on that. Now, all right, Devin, you got a question or two, and then we'll come back to Tony, because I know having you here, John, as a resource is just a phenomenal thing. And I'm going to go ahead and ask you back in either 2 to 3 weeks for one of our regular hour and a half shows, if I may, and we can discuss on behalf of Tony and Devin and Robin and Papa Stro.
Yes.
We want to officially invite our man from Roswell back. So good, I got that off the
chest.
Devin, what have you got to ask?
Yeah, well, John, I don't know. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the WB show called Roswell that was on back in the, I guess, the early aughts. I think it came out in 2000, maybe. I loved that show, and I actually watched every episode, and I have it on DVD. So I just wondered, living in Roswell, did you ever encounter somebody, or did you ever – well, for people who haven't seen the show, the premise is that there are, you know, beings who arrived in Roswell via the crash and actually survived and then took on human form and kind of integrated into society, living as humans amongst, you know, everybody in Roswell. So I'm curious if, you know, you had any experiences or anybody you knew, met anyone that gave you reason to think that might actually be true, that maybe there were some survivors or maybe some in some way alien life form arrived in Roswell and did not leave.
Okay. Remind me to tell a story about a friend I have that works at the UFO Museum. But to speak to the series itself, though, I also loved it. I was a teenager when it came out, so I was just the right age to watch it. I was, like, so upset when it got canceled after only 3 years. Loved the show. I loved it. Read the books, too. Now, I don't know. I don't think there's any actual alien survivors in Roswell, but a friend of mine used to work at the UFO Museum as the front greeter, and he is very convinced that he saw kind of like one of the quasi-human aliens that you'd see in the Men in Black movies. He really feels like he saw an alien come to visit the UFO Museum. He said that there were two men together. One was very short. The other was really, really tall. And my friend EJ, he claims that his eyes were literally on the side of his head. That's what he says. He's very adamant about it. He says, I'm not saying they were spaced far apart. I'm saying they were on the sides of his head like a horse. He's adamant about that. And he said that he would only talk to the shorter man. And he would ask the shorter man a question about this or that, and the shorter man would pause for a minute. And in his opinion, the shorter man was telepathically communicating with the taller man who was mute or just never spoke. And he was absolutely convinced, without a doubt, that these two were aliens in kind of a quasi-human disguise out to tour the UFO Museum.
Wow, that is cool. And it totally makes sense, right? Like, if I was an alien, I would want to kind of check out, you know, how I was being represented at the museum.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
You would, Devin, you would do that. That's what you would do if you were an alien. I know you would. I'd be too interested in getting a burger at one of those famous burger joints, frankly, but that's just me. All right. You got another one, Devin? I love your questions and Tony's questions.
Gosh, I don't know. I love to hear John talk about all this. So I don't know if I can formulate a good question, but I love to hear all these stories. And I don't know if I've ever been to Roswell, but I would definitely love to come visit. If a person like me was to come to visit, what would you recommend? You know, what places would you recommend we start looking at, or where would we go to kind of get the essence of everything?
Well, first of all, anyone that I've been on a podcast with, if you come to Roswell, let me know and I'll show you the spots myself. I have a friend named Dennis Balthazar. He used to give a wonderful driving tour of Roswell. Unfortunately, he just retired, but he had a very successful tour business where he would drive you all over the city and teach you all about Roswell's history, UFOs and otherwise. But of course, you've got to see the UFO Museum. If you're into aliens, of course, you got to see that. But I would suggest we have actually, Roswell has about four other museums. I'm on the board for the Historical Museum in Roswell, so I have to vouch for that. Do you gentlemen know the name Billy the Kid?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Billy the Kid, yeah. Roswell is very near Lincoln, where all the action happened with Billy the Kid in the Lincoln County War. The man who killed Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, lived here in Roswell. So we actually have a lot of Wild West history in Roswell that's totally eclipsed by the aliens. So if you'd like to see Roswell's Western history, definitely check out our Historical Museum. And also, our Roswell Museum and Art Center has a great exhibit on Robert H. Goddard, who tested his rockets in Roswell in the 1930s. So there's a lot more to Roswell besides the aliens. And I actually have, if we have time, I have a really cool connection between Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett and the aliens, if you all want to hear it.
Absolutely.
But can I blow the cover off of your secret, John? The picture that I posted somewhere has got a picture of you holding a book. Tell me about that book.
Ooh, I've written this. Okay. The problem is I've written to like 24 books now. Which was it, an alien book?
Was it Billy the Kid?
Okay, yeah, I one of my most popular books is called Tall Tales and Half-Truths of Billy the Kid, which collected all the bizarre legend and lore of Billy the Kid in one book, because everybody's always after the truth of Billy the Kid. Did he really die in 1881? Did he live on under a different alias? Yeah. So, that's my book, is the total opposite of the truth. It's all the great folklore, and that's one of my favorites, absolutely.
Some of that's just true, and you know it.
Do you believe Billy the Kid was lived on as Brushy Bill Roberts, or do you believe that Pat Garrett killed him in, I forget the gentleman's name of the gentleman's house that he killed him in? What do you think really happened to Billy the Kid?
So, Billy the Kid was allegedly killed in Fort Sumner, New Mexico, which is where my great-grandparents come from, so I have really deep family there. I tend to believe that Billy really did die, and the story happened as they said it did. He got shot and killed, and that was that. Now, an interesting thing, though, some stuff is coming to light that the man who claimed he was Jesse James, J. Frank Dalton, some stuff's getting out there that really backs up his story that he was Jesse James, and I can't, it's not my discoveries to put out there, but there might be some interesting things come out about J. Frank Dalton in the future. And J. Frank Dalton totally vouched for Brushy Bill. Dalton said Brushy Bill was Billy the Kid. So if it turns out that Dalton was really Jesse James, that might change how we look at Brushy Bill. Now, something I've got to bring this up.
About
Brushy Bill. This is...
Yeah, John, what were you going to bring up?
Oh, I was just... So something I've always thought was really cool about Brushy Bill, you got to think about this. So the governor of New Mexico in the late 1940s, his name was Thomas Mabry. And the governor of New Mexico, I know for a fact the lieutenant governor of New Mexico was at the airbase when the UFO crashed and all the retrieval happened. The governor of New Mexico, Thomas Mabry, had to know things about the crash. He had to have been informed about it, especially if his lieutenant governor was there. That was 47. Now, in 49, Mabry actually met Brushy Bill Roberts, who was requesting a pardon from him. So I guess what my point is, I just think it's cool that we had a New Mexico governor who had direct dealings with possibly aliens and possibly a living Billy the Kid. I just think that's a cool connection.
A life worth living.
Yeah.
Very, some great. So that was the connection. between Billy the Kid and the
actually,
alien.
No, there's another one.
Oh, good. What's the next connection?
Yeah. Okay, I'll try to make it as simple as I can. So the man who found the UFO debris in 1947, his name was Mac Brazel. Well, back in 1908, the man who shot Pat Garrett and killed him, his name was Jesse Wayne Brazel, and those two men were related. So the man who killed Pat Garrett is related to the man who found the UFO debris, and not only that, Garrett's death was a conspiracy that I can't even get into because we just waste all our time talking about that. But point is, both of the Brazels were involved in conspiracies, which is really interesting. You know, one was related to Pat Garrett, the other related to the UFO crash.
Well, that wow. opens up, like you said, a can of worms. Why do you think they killed Pat Garrett? I got to know.
Basically, it's this simple. It was just a political feud, and people didn't like him, and they just wanted him dead. And why I call it a conspiracy is nobody believes that Jesse Brazel shot Pat Garrett. Garrett rented land to Jesse Brazel. Garrett thought that Brazel was going to put cattle on the land, but Brazel put goats on the land, and goats will eat your grass, and they'll eat the root so that the land becomes useless. And so the idea was, it was all on purpose just to goad Garrett into a fight with Brazel. Then Brazel could say he killed Garrett in self-defense, and plus everybody loved Brazel, so they knew he wouldn't get convicted. And that's why it's a conspiracy. And they believe that another man named Killer Miller might have killed Garrett. It's very complicated. We could probably do a whole episode on Billy the Kid conspiracies. But that's the short of it.
That's great.
I'm a huge Western buff as well as paranormal, so I could absolutely sit through that. So,
okay.
Just know that when you come back, I'm going to have Western questions for you.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to it.
All right. I've got a question for you, and then I'm going to answer the same questions. I'm going to make you laugh. What is your favorite conspiracy theory about Roswell? And then I'll tell you my number one favorite conspiracy theory that I believe is true with all my heart. Go first, John LeMay.
Oh, gosh. I think you should tell yours first while I kind of try to go through my memory banks and see if I can think of a bizarre conspiracy theory that's my favorite.
I'm going to give the short version of mine. Mine is that Anna Nicole Smith and Daniel, her son, are living in North Myrtle Beach right now. And that body doubles were murdered. And I have a reason that I can't discuss. Ever.
Okay.
Other than the fact
I had never heard that one before.
Anna Nicole used to date a developer in North Myrtle Beach. We locals used to see her quite frequently. And I used to teach at a local university, and I saw Daniel. They were on television so much, it was not hard to miss Daniel, especially when I walked by and I said, "Hey, Daniel." And that boy stopped dead in his tracks. I said, "I think I'm going to go on now. I think I've done all I need to do here."
Yeah.
I was a professor there. Yeah. So, I mean, absolutely, for sure, I believe they're here in North Myrtle Beach. So they there's the wildest and craziest conspiracy theory you've ever heard, probably. But do you have one that you like?
I think the weather balloon conspiracy is pretty dumb myself. There's no way people would get that worked up over a weather balloon. You know, when people are lying when they constantly change their story and they get nervous and, you know, so something's fishy about Roswell. Even if it wasn't aliens, I'm sure it wasn't a weather balloon, so. But I can't think of any funny conspiracy theories. I'm sure there are some weird funny ones, and I just I can't think of any.
Well, I'll tell you from my experience and what I found out, Roswell was real. It was as real as it could get. And so there's no conspiracy there. It's for real, and that's about all I want to say. But that's kind of what got me into this whole UFO vampire dead body conspiracy thing back in 1988, 89 or something like that. This is what got me in. It was Roswell.
Okay.
So yeah, it's so interesting. It's so interesting. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time left because I didn't schedule one of our special 90-minute episodes, but can you briefly tell us about the new book you're working on? It sounds so utterly fascinating. We were talking about it in the green room about the not made items, the things that weren't made.
Yeah, so I do a few UFO books. First of all, if anybody heard this, we're really interested in the stories I just told. The book you would want is called Roswell, USA. It's got the alien ghosts and all that stuff in it. But what I'm really getting known for, actually, is film history books, and specifically books about movies that they never made. This past summer, I put out Jaws Unmade, which was about all the different Jaws sequels and ripoffs they planned but didn't actually shoot. And what I'm working on right now, which is what we were talking about in the green room, tentatively I'm calling it Classic Monsters Unmade, and it's going to be every Universal and Hammer, Dracula, Frankenstein, Mummy, Wolfman movie that they ever wrote but didn't actually shoot. Plus, let's say, a few alternate versions of movies that they actually did, because movies always change a lot throughout the development of the screenplay. Like right now I'm working on how they developed The Mummy. And did you all know that The Mummy was based on the Italian mystic, I don't know how to say his name, Cagliostro? Is that, do you all familiar with that name? Cagliostro?
I think that's right.
I might just be misinterpreting
his name. How did that all get entwined and intertangled?
How I wrote the books or Cagliostro?
Cagliostro and The Mummy.
Okay.
How did that?
So one of the old writers for Universal was just intrigued by Cagliostro, who I believe founded the Egyptian wing of the Masons. And basically they made Cagliostro like an Egyptian Dracula who would sleep in a mummy's sarcophagus at night and wrap himself up in bandages. It's kind of sort of silly, but it's also kind of interesting. And eventually they just did away with Cagliostro, made a new character. They decided to make him an entirely Egyptian mummy as opposed to an Italian, and that's how it kind of developed. And all movies are like that. They all have wild developmental processes that most people just don't know about.
This is great. Yes. Well, can I please ask you back to talk about horror films and to talk about Debris from Roswell
and Billy the
we'll
Kid
get our how about we'll get our list together, and if you don't mind, I'd love to have a series with you. You've done so many great things, and I just think everybody, including Devin, Tony, and I would like Devin and Tony, would we like to have him back a couple of times to talk about this stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely. Yes, please.
Oh, and a Billy the Kid thing. And by the way, I need to get a list of your books so I can buy a copy of each. So you just sold some books, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Since you gave me a copy of your book, I'll give you at least one copy of one of my books. Just tell me which one you want, and I'll send you that one. But
Roswell, USA.
In the green. Okay. I'll do that.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I want. I'll see what I recognize.
Okay.
In the book, it'll be great. But yeah, it's been great. And now we just have a couple minutes left, so. Who's got a question for somebody? No Anna Nicole questions, okay? we're saving that for a separate show. But who's got a question for John LeMay, our guest?
John, this is Devin. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Devin.
Oh, I wanted to know, and I don't think we've talked about, have you had any UFO sightings yourself, or have there been any around Roswell, you know, since you've been around?
Yeah, I wouldn't call Roswell a UFO hotspot, but I have actually, no kidding, I have seen one before. It had to have been a UFO based on the way it moved. It actually didn't make that big of an impression on me. I was in a hot tub one night, and there was a light flying over that looked like an airplane, except for suddenly it shot straight up into the air and disappeared into space, so it couldn't have been an airplane. So couldn't see any details, you know, it was just a light, but, you know, and it was definitely interesting, but it really didn't make a huge impression on me. But it obviously wasn't an aircraft that I was familiar with, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've had a similar sightings myself, but in Kansas.
I think a lot of people have. A lot of people have seen just the strange lights in the sky that don't behave like a normal airplane or a satellite either.
Yeah.
I saw something up in Greenville, South Carolina. I saw a, quote, plane at night make a landing in the middle of the forest because the airport was the other way. There were a couple of us looking. I said, what is that plane doing? We guessed it was a plane. It was a light, and it was just going down, headed down into the forest. And I said, guys, that was a UFO. And they said, you know, I guess it was. And I think a lot of people are like that. They see something that's really unusual, and they it doesn't trip the switch. Do you think, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good summarization. I just doesn't, you know, if all you see is a light, it's not a big deal. It's when you see the aliens is when it's a big deal.
I don't know, man.
And
I think the lights
are
pretty scary. Yeah, and Tony, did you have a final question?
Well, now I've got about 10.
pick one, and we'll have him back in a couple of weeks. And write him down, buddy.
Well, let's go with the alien autopsies. Were they performed in Roswell, or were they performed at Wright-Patterson?
That's one I can't really remember. Now, one of the nurses I do remember told Glenn Dennis that the aliens really, the smell was just she couldn't take it. And I don't know if that means just they smelled bad or they were doing the autopsy there. I think the famous alien autopsy video that was likely a hoax, I think the story with that was that the alien bodies were flown to Wright-Patterson, and that's where, like, the real examinations would have taken place. I don't recall if they happened at the Roswell Base Hospital or not.
I'm going to whisper this. Neither. Okay? I whispered that. They took place at neither of those places. But that's okay.
Oh, okay.
We'll leave it at that. We'll put our phones down sometime and walk into another room and discuss that little piece
of
information.
Okay. It's serious when you got to put the phone down.
Yeah, it is.
And turn it off. Leave the phone down. Walk out on the porch. Walk out into the yard. Go out into the road. And then walk down to the end of the road where no one's there within 200 feet of you. And then maybe. Just maybe you can discuss something with some privacy. Who knows? But look, John, thank you so much. It's been great. Thank you for putting up with me and my wonderful, wonderful co-hosts who are very, very qualified. And I think we've all been kind of like kids, and you've just had some great stories for us. We truly want to have you back sooner than later to cover some other topics. And so thank you very much, Devin. Thank you for being here. And you know that Robin and Papa Stroh are going to go berserk when we schedule our extra long scary cast with John LeMay. They're going to go crazy. Papa Stroh, oh gosh, he is the Godzilla guy of Godzilla guys, and you've got books on Godzilla, don't you?
Yeah, that's my moneymaker. Yeah, Godzilla.
Godzilla. That's exactly right. I think that's how they pronounce it. Anyway, thanks a lot, folks. It's been great. It's been a most wonderful, scary cast. We will see everybody. And by the way, thanks to VOC Nation and Brady Hicks for having us on VOC Nation on Friday nights. We love it. We're on at 11 o'clock Friday night. Right after that, at midnight, is Papa Stroh's The Stroh Zone, where he and Dorothy will cavort around and will have some kind of a famous B or C horror film. And that's a lot of fun. So be sure to be there. All part of the VOC Nation. Let's see, Papa Stroh and I will be together on WCW Retro Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. And then we will be 11 p.m. on Friday night, a rebroadcast of this great show, and, of course, the Stroh Zone. So we got a lot going on right here on the VOC Nation. Thank you, Tony, very much. From Harlan, the murder capital of the world, thank you, Devin, our man in Hollywood. We couldn't do it without you. And, of course, John LeMay, what a great guest you've been. You've taught us so much. Tony and Devin and I are learning junkies. Is that correct,
absolutely,
Tony?
Yeah.
Devin,
you better believe it. Sure.
We are learning junkies.
Totally.
Well, I'll come back on anytime and learn you all some more. So.
Learn us some more. That's the way we say it down here in the South. You're going to learn us some more. That's great.
Damon Roswell.
So thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. It's been great. And we'll see you the next time on ScaryCast. This is Dr. John from Myrtle Beach, the sun, fun, and COVID capital of the world. Cheers.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Au revoir.